Hey guys, I'm Valerie.
And I'm Jasmine, and this is Crafts, Drafts, and Crime.
And we are super excited to be bringing you season 7. It was highly requested. And yeah, we're going to talk about some cults.
Oh, yay, cults!
Yay! As yay as that can be. I really thought starting out with this season, I'm like, okay, cool. It's going to be like kind of informative and it's going to be, you know, interesting. Oh my goodness, this first case is tragic. It took a turn that I was not expecting. And maybe that was just ignorance on my part, but I really thought it was going to be more informative than depressing. So that's not what you're getting today. You're getting depressing. Maybe next time.
I won't judge you for thinking that way. But yeah, let's get ready to be depressed. Okay, I just want to put that in there.
Yes. And also, the day that this is coming out is my birthday.
Yes! I'm so excited!
I know. So happy birthday to me on our first cult day. So let's do the damn thing. And of course, you know, I like to travel for my birthday. So we are going to be traveling today to Japan.
Oh, yes. One of the places I definitely have always wanted to go. I'm so excited.
Yes. So this is not a good representation of Japan. Unfortunately, Japan seems super amazing. But sources for today are the CDC, Textbook of Military Medicine, PlasticSurgery.org, MedicalNewsToday.com, NTI.org, Fox News, NHK World Japan, Britannica, History.com, The Guardian, BBC News, FAS.org, Asahi, Herald, New York Times, Murderpedia, and Chicago Tribune. So this is going to get nuts in case that list of sources did not make that evident. When you have a lot of things that are history and news backed, it's usually pretty alarming. And we are going to be talking about Aum Shinrikyo, which I'm going to refer mostly as Aum because that's what they refer to it as in this cult. So have you ever heard of this cult?
No, I have not, actually.
Okay, I had not either. I stumbled upon this, as I do most things, when I was looking up something that had nothing to do with this on Reddit. And I got in a little tailspin, found out something about this, started doing a little bit of reading, got a little bit too fascinated, and here we are. So we're going to talk about first, you know, their cult formation and also about the leader. So the leader's name is Shako Asahara, but he was actually born Chizu Matsumoto. He was born in a really large but very poor family, and he was actually born with infantile glaucoma, so he was partially blind, and his vision worsened very quickly. So he was almost entirely blind when he was a kid. So growing up, he actually bullied other kids and would manipulate people into doing things for him. So, you know, perfect cult leader. And when he got older, he wanted to go to medical school, but he was actually denied entry. So he had spent time studying acupuncture and pharmacology, and he decided to open up his own pharmacy. He was convicted of fraud and of selling bogus remedies, though, so he was shut down pretty shortly after. Apparently you can't do that. Who knew?
Look at that. Us going into a pharmacy cult. That's how I feel right now.
He kind of takes that idea and runs with it a little bit. Because in 1984, he started a yoga and meditation class. And it was called, and I apologize for anything that I mispronounce for if anybody does know the real pronunciation. Again, I tried to look things up. I am just terrible at this. I'm going to try my best. Omu Shinsen no Kai, which means in English, Aum Mountains Hermit Society. So that's what the name of this class is called. And he began, you know, a few trial and errors and different new religions. But he ultimately decided that he was actually going to start his own religion. And in his religion, you could survive the apocalypse and you are not doomed to hell. So his religion was based on the mix of Hindu, Buddhist, and Tibetan practices. So he was the kind of person when this was starting out who was like preaching on street corners of an Armageddon and trying to scare people. He was very certain that a third world war was going to take place. He was even tempted to try to make it start on his own. So by 1985, he said that God Shiva appointed him Aburketsu no Makoto, which means the god of light who leads the armies of the gods, during a meditation session that he had. So he believed himself to have achieved enlightenment, and he claimed that he would travel time and that he could levitate. And I actually read one of the articles that I read was pretty funny. They were talking about his levitation kind of looked like he just kind of like maybe jumped like, I don't know, 3 centimeters off the floor with his legs crossed. So it was like pretty funny.
I would try to do.
Exactly. Exactly. So like not terribly believable, but you know, and here's the thing about him that I thought was really interesting. He did not just want to recruit anybody at all. Asahara actually sought out very intelligent people who could do very powerful things. So, like, he tried not to just, you know, go out in the street and like, oh, hey, are you interested? Come on in. Like, no, he wanted scientists, lawyers, engineers. He wanted people who were like fresh graduates out of college who are really young and impressionable, but also really, you know, potentially successful and intelligent. Because if he had that, then he would be able to further all of his other plans. And he succeeded. He did a great job at manipulating these people. So the easiest way for him to do that was to present to them a religion that accepted them and the healing powers of yoga. So Asahara offered a multi-day yoga seminar, which drew people in, claiming that he could help them all find the purpose in their life. That sounds great, right?
Yeah, definitely. Sounds like something I would want to join.
Exactly. But once they were inside, it would take an immediate turn. He insisted that people bring all of their prized possessions. He would take as much money from them as possible. And he ended up actually taking enough money from these people that he was able to make a commune exactly how he wanted it on land that he was able to buy at the base of Mount Fuji in Japan.
That had to have been beautiful, though. Like being.
Oh, yeah. But it's extreme.
I'm sorry. This I know it's not supposed to sound appealing, but it does.
I promise it's not, and we'll get into why very shortly. Actually, so he did a lot of different brainwashing techniques, which obviously is a big part of any kind of cult is going to be brainwashing. Well, he had a different series of, you know, documents and doctrines that, you know, people follow and read. And one of the things in there was, quote, "Rather than helping human society, which has become like hell, I have started to think that my role is to help the new believers of high spirituality survive." So people started to think that breaking away from the cult meant that they were damned to this eternal hell, which was a risk that a lot of people weren't willing to take, especially because all of this brainwashing happened after an initiation, which, you know, is different for everybody. But, for example, one member was forced to drink warm water until he was puking completely clear.
What?
So, like, for a full, a little over 24 hours, just only drinking warm water.
So, it kind of, like, this kind of, like, makes me think of, like, a gang. Like, you know, when you join a gang, you know, you get beat
up. I don't know what it's like to join a gang.
Okay, well, anybody who didn't know. But yeah, when you join a gang, you get beat up for however long is their standard. And then when you get out of the gang, you basically get beat up till you die. So that's how I feel like a cult is, when you try to escape it.
Okay. But anyways, well, and, you know, obviously there were consequences too if you tried to escape. But, and another thing is, like, when you're starved and when you're in this kind of severe funk, for lack of a better word, in your physical state, it's easy to be brainwashed. You're not thinking clearly.
Right. And so they would make them drink warm water until they threw up clear.
That's correct. Other people also just wouldn't eat for a certain period of time. So, and if you're puking completely clear, it's because there's nothing in your system. So can you imagine how faint you would be?
Yeah, that would be a no for me. Yeah, you know, with the bad BBs and all.
I mean, they don't tell you before you go in that that's going to happen. I think that would probably. But what's crazy is that people get so entranced with things like this that people actually paid, and just bear with me here while I say it. People paid to drink Asahara's semen and blood. That way they connect with his guru powers.
Stop it.
I am not kidding. And when I say paid, I don't mean they were like, oh, you know, like, here's $20, like thousands of dollars. That's how much people believed in his ability to, you know, prevent them from being damned to hell. And I mean, just crazy shit. And other people also did ceremonies, which included using his bath water.
Okay, so I don't want to be gross because I don't know, like, if my family listens, but I don't care. I don't think I would want to have to pay to swallow semen. That part just sticks out to me. I don't know if anybody else, like, you know, I just, okay. Yeah, and then the bath, yeah, no.
What about drinking somebody's blood?
I mean, no, you don't want to do that because you don't know where they've been at, and you don't know what they got in blood, but, like, this.
The semen, like, really puts you over the edge.
Yeah, like, I'm not particularly fond of swallowing semen.
This is getting too personal.
I don't think I would be wanting to pay for that. Like, why?
I draw the line at paying for it. If it's free, I'll consider it. If it's free and I get your guru powers, so I will think
sorry.
About it.
I'm so sorry, everybody.
This is stuff none of us needed to know.
Oh, man. Anyways.
So, we're gonna just pretend like that didn't happen. In 1987, Asahara officially changed his name. So, became Asahara. And the cult name became Aum Shinriko, which means supreme truth. And so, again, I'm going to refer to it mostly as Aum. In 1989, Aum was recognized as a religious organization by Japan, which allowed them many tax benefits and also helped in the spread of their beliefs worldwide. So there were tens of thousands of followers outside of Japan, especially in Russia and in New York, United States. So by now, Aum is essentially just a doomsday cult. And Asahara spoke of an upcoming apocalypse, and he was just insanely paranoid. And people believed him, and people, you know, and I can understand how people can be convinced that, you know, an apocalypse is coming. We've, you know, gone through many of those stages where we say that the world is going to end in 2012 and then whenever else it was supposed to happen that I can't remember right now. So yeah, I get that.
But yeah, I'm sorry to cut you off. I did believe in, like, Doomsday. Have you ever seen that show Doomsday Preppers?
Nope.
No, it was a pretty good show. Like, people actually made, like, bunkers underground. And my cousin, he actually used to, like, make his own, like, canned goods, basically, like, fruits mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Because he was convinced that one day there's going to be an apocalypse. He was only, like, 13 or 14.
Oh, wow.
But, yeah.
Well, and see, then that's what's happening. You know, that's what's happening here, basically, minus the canning of goods. I can't promise that that was happening. I did not read that. But, you know, he's convincing people that, you know, an apocalypse is coming and the only way you're going to be saved is if you're a part of our team, essentially, if you're part of our religion. So at this point, it's probably not surprising that people being recruited into the cult were being assaulted and that their family members were being kidnapped, which includes children. So, like, if somebody's mother came to... you know, came to the cult, their son would later be kidnapped. And, you know, they were bringing a lot of people into the cult who weren't going there by choice. So there's a lawyer whose name was Satsumi Sakamoto, who was actively helping families free their children from Aum's control. Because remember, it's not, you can't just walk out of a cult and decide you're not going to be part of them anymore. That's not how cults work. So Aum members warned him to back off. And they were particularly threatened because Satsumi had actually previously won a legal battle against the Unification Church on behalf of family members, and the church suffered a very large financial loss. So Satsumi convinced Asahara to give blood samples to be tested for his special powers. I just, reading that just cracks me the fuck up. And he was like, yeah, you can totally see my special powers in my blood. And they're like, no, nothing's different about your blood, bro. And, you know, so he was really pissed. So needless to say, you know, Asahara is pissed at this lawyer. So on the early morning, and here's your trigger warning for the rest of the episode. It's going to get dirty from here on out. So on the early morning of November 4th of 1989, it was at like 3 or 4 in the morning, 6 Aum members broke into Sakamoto's home. So Satsumi, who was 33, and his wife, who was 29-year-old Satoko, were both injected with potassium chloride. Their 14-month-old son, Tatsuhiko, was injected also. So Satsui was then hit unconscious with a hammer and strangled to death. Satoko actually died from the potassium chloride injection, and they removed all of their bodies from the home, removed their teeth to make it difficult to identify them, and then buried them all in separate barrels in separate locations. They burned the bed sheets that they killed them on, and they dropped their weapons into the ocean. Their remains were not found for 6 years. And we will touch a little bit back on that a little bit later, but I'm going to move forward for now in our timeline. So I'm going to give you a brief science lesson, because I do think that this is very important for understanding the next two scenarios that I'm going to talk about. So first, I want to tell you a little bit about sarin. It's a cholinergic nerve agent, which is a type of chemical warfare agent. It's man-made, it's super toxic, and it's fast-acting. So a cholinergic agent is something that affects the actions of acetylcholine, which is directly involved in nerve impulses, heart rate, blood vessel dilation, things like that that are super important in your body. It was originally used as a pesticide in the 1930s in Germany, and it's similar to an insecticide and chemical compound, just like significantly more dangerous. So it's completely odorless, completely colorless, and completely tasteless. So it is incredibly hard to detect. And it can actually be mixed with water and food without being noticed. And it can be evaporated as gas and have toxic consequences in the environment. So if it evaporates super quickly, and therefore it wouldn't have a persistent threat to one area if an area was exposed. So like if you had it in your garden, that area would be incredibly toxic, but only for a period of time, and then it would be okay again.
So this might be a stupid question. This is something that's legal, right?
Well, no.
Does it sound like it should be, but...
Insecticides are legal, but insecticides are not dangerous. Insecticides are dangerous if you eat them.
Yeah, whenever you spray it, it's almost like a weed killer. Like, when you spray it, you're not supposed to touch.
Right. You're just, you know, there's things like that you're not supposed to consume. Sarin, on the other hand, is not something that's why it's like a man-made compound. It's not something that you can buy. It's something you have to make.
Right.
And when it was first made, was for experimental purposes. And it had all these incredible, terrible effects. So, which is why it's not really a thing that people make. You know, unless you want to use it as a warfare agent, as chemical warfare.
Gotcha. Basically. Okay.
So it's essentially a weapon. So people who don't experience immediate breathing loss from sarin, there is an antidote available, and it must be used really quickly. And I just want to remind you, it's super hard to physically observe sarin. So most people would not know that they immediately need an antidote for it. But there are some signs of exposure, but they're really similar signs to anything. It's like chest tightness, nausea, runny nose, watery eyes, drowsiness, weakness. But again, that doesn't mean that you've been exposed to sarin. All of those can be side effects for anything.
Right. So, it's just your generic side effect list that you're going through.
Right. And you're not going to know that you would need an antidote to sarin unless you physically know that there's sarin there. So it's not really... I don't want to say that it's not a practical solution, because if you know that you have it, then yes, it is, which that will come up in a little bit, but like it's not practical for the average human. So,
well, if you weren't a hypochondriac before this, now's right. The time to be one.
Well, and you can't just give yourself an antidote for something that you don't need. Right. That's also dangerous. So there's not really any winning. So a really small amount of exposure, like a single drop, can lead to these effects. It is very potent. So any large amount of exposure is really likely to lead to a rapid onset of symptoms such as paralysis, respiratory failure, loss of consciousness, or convulsions. Even if it touches your clothing, you could later be at risk. So if you were to like get it on your clothing just a drop, you'd have to basically safely discard your clothing to prevent further exposure and hope it doesn't actually get through to your skin. And you could experience some of these effects without... you know, getting severely sick. But again, it just depends on the amount of exposure and what kind of exposure. So it's absolutely insane. in case that's not evident. It's just absolutely insane. It actually really recently, I think it was 2017, was used in attacks in Syria, which maybe someday I'll cover that. It just, you know, actually let us know how you feel about like bioterrorist attacks and chemical warfare attacks and stuff like that. Like, if that's something that people would be interested in, I feel like we could easily make a season out of that.
Absolutely. But, I would definitely be interested in that.
Well, I'm not asking you. No, I'm kidding.
Either way, I have no choice. No. But, like, yeah, I believe that. I think that would make a good, like, an interesting season.
I think so, too. Yeah. So, everybody, let us know what you think about that. Anyway, so for Alm, making this chemical warfare was deemed necessary because Asahara anticipated an attack on the cult, and he wanted to be prepared. So it wasn't their first attempt at trying to make something either. For years, the group's main scientist, who was Seichi Endo, had failed many experiments with biological and chemical warfare. He actually tried his hand at botulinum toxin, which is known as Botox. Because for anybody who doesn't know, Botox is incredibly poisonous. So
Is it really?
Oh my god, it's so poisonous. It's ridiculous.
But they put it in your face and they anywhere sure else. Do. And they say it's good for headaches or migraines.
So let me redo this. This is directly from plasticsurgery.org. Because you can actually even see if you were going to sign up for something. It's like one of those things that I imagine you have to sign a waiver for.
Yeah.
but I mean, like, directly on any kind of website. Cause then I was also just like browsing through a couple other websites where like you can get it done locally, and sure as shit, at every single website, it tells you how dangerous it is. So
yeah, we carry it in the pharmacy.
Sure do. Dangerous as shit. But again, it's not the same kind of dangerous as sarin. Well, hold on. Just let me read this. So, botulinum toxin is a purified substance that's derived from bacteria. Injections of it block the nerve signals to the muscle in which it's injected. Without a signal, the muscle is not able to contract. The end result is diminished, unwanted facial wrinkles or appearance. So, as little as 1 kilogram can wipe out the entire planet.
What the fuck?
That's how toxic it is.
Jesus Christ. Well, you know, I did want Botox at one point in my life, but you know, now not so much.
I mean, they find a way to do it in a safe way to, you know, to work for Botox for your face, but the actual ingredient in that is so poisonous, it's ridiculous. And very similar to sarin, you can quickly go into paralysis.
Yeah. That's how I feel like all drugs, honestly. Like, I feel like they're all it's almost like once you start on a medication, not saying, you know, take your medication, people. Take your medication, please, by all means. But it's like sometimes like you start taking one medicine for one thing and then it leads to these other issues and you gotta keep taking more. It's kinda like sometimes like things like this, it's almost like setting you up for failure in a way.
Yeah, I totally get that. And especially things that are like optional, like Botox.
Like Botox, yeah. Like any kind of optional surgeries or anything, right? Enhancements,
but a lot of people do it, and like you said, it can also help with migraines, and there's, you know, there's different reasons to do it, and it's performed perfectly safely. It's just crazy that something that is so dangerous can be used so safely. Like, that's what gets me. I'm like, how is that possible? That's so cool. Also terrifying. So it just depends on what side that you fall on. I'm not going to go into how you can make it in such a way that it's in like its maximum toxicity. So, you know, of course, you know, if you just like we have, you know, bottles in the pharmacy at the hospital, like if you were to hold like a bottle of it, like you're not going to go into paralysis. You know what I mean? Like, but if I were to inject it into your arm, something could happen to you.
I was going to say, yeah, because I like grab them.
You could do it with your bare hand and you would be okay, but I'm not going to talk about how you can make it to its maximum toxicity, because again, this is, you know, this is not just like, you know, as it exists. It's that you have to do, you know, a certain kind of, I'm not going to get into it because I'm not going to teach people how to kill people.
Why not? This is what we're here for.
It's not what we're here for.
comedy podcast for nothing.
But I'm not going to teach you how to kill people. That's where I draw the line. That's the only thing. So when Endo was trying to make this, he was unable to get any active strain of the bacteria. So he couldn't effectively make it as dangerous of a toxin as he wanted to. So on March 15th of 1995, a member released the compound at Kasumigeski subway station, and fortunately, nothing happened because they did not prepare it properly with an active strain to make it that toxic.
I feel like I've heard of this.
Oh, it's gonna get worse in a hot minute here. So they also tried to make anthrax, and at this point in time, Asahara wanted something that was, you know, cost-effective that would work. So Masami Tachiya, had joined the cult in 1991 under the guise of the yoga class, helping him recover from whiplash that he had experienced in a car wreck. He was 26 years old, and he had his master's degree in organic and physical chemistry. So for Asahara, Masami's perfect. By 1994, he was working in his laboratory to try and make sarin, and he succeeded. So Asahara was incredibly excited, and he wanted Masami to make a total of 70 tons of sarin. But because of his limited workspace, it wasn't going to be possible. So Asahara, you know, he ordered construction of a chemical plant on their premises, and it was going to be named Satyan 7, which meant truth. And members would claim publicly that inside the building they were making toothpaste and fertilizer, you know, nothing dangerous. Not sarin, not 70 tons of sarin.
Okay.
So I'm going to tell you guys about two attacks. The first one is in Matsumoto, and that is obviously in Japan. At 11:30 p.m. on June 27th of 1994, police were notified of 274 residents of Matsumoto being transferred to the hospital for treatment. Several of them were having weird issues with their eyes, including pain, darkened vision, and pupil constriction. They were also experiencing extreme nausea, headaches, and numbness. The first to call an ambulance was Yoshiyuki Kono, who felt sick, but he found his wife, Sumiko, unconscious. She suffered cardiac and respiratory arrest and fell into a coma. For 14 years, Sumiko remained in that coma until she died in 2008. She never came out of that coma.
14 years?
14 years. In addition, two people immediately had died upon arrival at the hospital, and five other residents were found deceased in their homes. So that's a total of eight people dead and hundreds injured. Less than an hour before the call to the police, at 10:40 p.m., OWL members used a converted refrigerator truck to disperse 12 liters of sarin as an aerosol into the neighborhood. It was heated up to become a gas and was dispersed with fans propelling its spread for a total of 10 minutes. So they're using it like an aerosol. So imagine you're spraying a hairspray can, but yeah, it's hot. And so it's a gas that you're blowing and fanning into the neighborhood, but it's the toxic substance that I just explained to you.
That is fucking 10 crazy. Minutes.
So they chose to do this in Matsumoto because not long before the attack, residents of the area petitioned against Alm opening up an office in Matsumoto. So Asahara found it to be the perfect place to test his sarin and prevent the verdict from happening, knowing the ultimate fate of it, because that was due on July 19th of 1994, and the judges also lived in Matsumoto. The police began their investigation during the daylight the next morning, and they discovered a couple of really weird things. Grass in the immediate area was withering, leaves were changing color, and the pond area was littered with dead fish, dead bugs, and dead birds. So the police were like, okay, well, this pond has to do something with the origin of this toxicity. So the Nagano Forensic Science Laboratory took samples of the water, and they got to work. And just a couple days later, they identified that there was sarin in the water. So at first, a chemical salesman was a suspect in the crime. Police thought that he was making a homemade herbicide or pesticide, and he accidentally released the toxin into the area. But he was quickly cleared because, again, he was not making the substance and they were not able to find that. And Alan quickly became the suspect of this crime, which led for a push for police to raid the cult. The vegetation near Alm's sect began to die, and it smelled of a really weird odor, but police did not have any kind of warrant to search the property. So Alm began, just destroying evidence in response, and the judges were really ill, so they weren't able to get that verdict out on their original date. So all of that got delayed exactly like they wanted.
Gotcha.
Okay, so now I'm going to tell you about the really large attack, which is going to be the Tokyo Subway Sarin attack. So in 1995, over 33 million people lived in Tokyo. And of them, over 8 million used the subway every single day. Tokyo's metro is the busiest in the entire world. So Tokyo's public transit is incredibly advanced, clean. They actually helped design several public transits all over the world. They actually were a huge part of Germany's transit system. I remember living there. But it makes it a very efficient and easy way to travel throughout an enormous city without having to wait in traffic because it's underground. It also makes it a really good place for an attack. So,
I'm just thinking about, I've seen, videos of, videos or, and pictures of, their subways and, how crowded they are.
Yes.
I thought, maybe, New York City, seeing pictures and videos of their subways are pretty crowded. No. They're, super fucking packed. People are basically on top of each other.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking busy. What I've looked at too. I remember we actually used the subway quite a bit in Taiwan, my friend Sarah and I, when we were there. And there's same thing, incredibly busy, very clean, very efficient. It's a very easy way to travel. And they have maps everywhere. I mean, it's very easy, even as a foreigner, even not speaking another language that is helpful over there, to be able to use it. So even for people who, are visiting Tokyo, I'm sure it's just an incredibly easy way to get around.
Right.
So a police raid at Alm was scheduled to happen on March 22nd, 1995. Asahara caught word of this because, everybody's in his freaking cult. Somebody knew about it. And by his logic, an attack would keep police too busy to continue with the raid. So on Monday, March 20th, 1995, Asahara sent out 10 members to commit a mass murder. 5 were going to board the metro, with the other 5 waiting on the other side in a getaway car. So at morning rush hour, the men boarded 3 metro lines that were passing through the Kasumigaseki and Nagatacho districts of Tokyo, Japan, which is where their parliament headquarters, which is called the DEET, is located. So each of the men carried with them 2 plastic bags filled with 0.9 liters, which is about 30 fluid ounces, of liquid sarin wrapped in newspaper. They also each had an umbrella with a sharpened tip so that they could puncture the bags of sarin. So the first line, the Chiyoda line, which is a green line there, had Iku Hayashi board at 7:48 a.m. at the Sendagi stop going south with Tamamitsu Nimi waiting as his getaway driver. 3 stops later, as the metro approached Shin Achinomitsu Station, Hayashi punctured his first bag of sarin and exited the metro. As the train approached the Kasumigaseki station, which is 4 stops later, people were reacting to the fumes. Passengers were choking, vomiting, and losing their vision and muscle control. The train was taken out of service at the very next station, which is Koke Gijidome. Everyone was ordered off of the metro, and attendants attempted to remove what remained, which is a bag of sarin. 2 of the station attendants actually died from the exposure to the sarin while trying to discard it. The next line, which is the Marunouchi line, that's the red line, had Kenichi Hiros board the train and Koichi Kitamura assigned as the getaway driver. So Hiros boarded at Ikebukuro Station going westbound. He was prepared to release the sarin and get off the metro, but he noticed that a schoolgirl was paying attention to him. He thought that the newspaper was making a lot of noise wrapped around the sarin, so he decided it would be best to wait and release it where nobody would notice quickly what was going on. So he got off the metro at the next station and moved to a different car so that nobody would notice. He carried on the westbound route, and as the train approached Achinomizu Station, Hiros punctured the sarin bags on the floor with great force, so great that he actually bent the tip of the umbrella. He exited the train, but he had actually been exposed. So when his getaway driver, Kitamura, pulled up to grab him, they administered an antidote so that he would survive. They were prepared with an antidote in each one of the getaway cars just in case.
That is crazy. Like, it's almost like, I feel like, maybe this might be wrong to say, but, like, I kind of feel like it's like a suicide bomber. Like, you know, I guess maybe, like, with suicide bombers, they knew, obviously, like, at the end, they were going to die no matter what. But, like, this, they were, like, they knew they had the chance of potentially dying because they were risking themselves with the exposure to the sarin.
You know, it's funny that you say that because I actually feel the opposite. I feel like they were like, there's no way in hell I'm dying from this. I'm doing this, and then I'm going to administer the antidote if I need to.
See, that's where y'all got me messed up, because I'm not about to sit there and put my life in risk like that. Or anybody else's. Anybody else's.
Well, I know what you mean.
They're going to do anybody else. But, like, if I know there's a chance, like, even if it's in the far back of my brain, like, I will not do that. That's crazy.
Right. I just wonder, like, if they would have done it if they did have to stay on the train. I don't know.
I don't think so. I don't know, though. They, you know, people do crazy stuff when they're, like, super, like, hard believers of whatever they're in. So
it's true.
I bet you if he was, like, the only way that you'll be saved is if you do this, but you have to stay there to ensure it works or blah, 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 blah.
People would have done it. Yeah. You're right. So that metro actually continued on for 14 more stops. So as the train approached Nakano Sekau Station, two passengers experiencing extreme effects were removed from the train for medical help. One of them actually died shortly later. A station attendant removed the sarin packs from the floor of the car, but the sarin had actually already spread all over the floor, so it was still in the air, and it was contaminating anybody who came into that car. The metro continued for 5 more stops to the end of the line and then turned around to return eastbound. It wasn't until the second stop going eastbound at Shinkonji Station that the train was evacuated and put out of service. So that one ran for a while after the sarin was released. So also on that red Marunouchi line but headed eastbound, Masato Yakayama was assigned to release the sarin, and Kiyotaka Tonozaki was going to be his getaway driver. So Yokoyama boarded the train at Shinjuku Station at 7:39 a.m. He was actually wearing a disguise of a wig and glasses. And as the train approached Yatsuya Station, Yokoyama punctured one of his sarin bags with a small hole, and he did not fully puncture the second bag, so no sarin released from that bag. Hmm. It began to release very slowly because of how lightly he had punctured the first one, too. And Yokoyama joined his getaway driver, and they drove away from the scene. When the train reached the end of the line, it was searched. The station attendants were not able to locate anything, so the train continued on and began moving back westbound. And at the third stop, Korakuen, passengers were beginning to get ill, and someone noticed the bags of sarin. So at the next stop, Hango Sanchom, the attendant removed the bags of sarin. The train briefly delayed to mop the floor, and the train carried on westbound. The train continued to the end of the line again, and then turned around to head back eastbound. It wasn't until 9:27 a.m., which was an hour and 48 minutes later, that the train was put out of service at Koke Gijidome Station. Hundreds of people were injured. Nobody actually died on that line.
Wow.
So the Gray Hibiya line going northeast was assigned to Toru Toyoda and getaway driver Katsuya Takahashi. Toyoda boarded the train at Naka Meguro Station at 9:59 a.m. As the train approached the very next station, Ebisu, Toyoda punctured his sarin bags and exited the train. Passengers began feeling the effects within minutes, and three stations later, at Kamaya-cho Station, the train car with the sarin bags was evacuated, and several passengers were brought to the hospital for immediate medical attention, one of which later died. At the next stop, the Kasumigaseki Station, the entire train was evacuated and put out of service. So the Gray Hibiya line going southwest was assigned to Yaso Hayashi and getaway driver Shigo Sugimoto. He boarded at the Ino Station at 7:43 a.m. Two stops later, at Akihabara Station, Hayashi punctured his sarin bags and exited the train. Almost immediately, passengers fell ill. One passenger noticed a wet newspaper and bag on the floor of the train car, and so he assumed that's what it was coming from. So when the door opened at the next station, Kodema-cho, the passenger actually kicked the bag out of the train car. Well, the liquid sarin soaked the platform of the metro station, which actually killed four people.
Wow. Like, so I, like, honestly wouldn't even have thought anything about that bag and the wet newspaper.
I probably wouldn't have either.
Like,
I know.
Like, what asshole, like, left their trash there? Like, that's it. Like, I probably would have picked it up.
Right.
Or something. And then, like, I would have never, like, just had, like, a second thought, like, this is what's causing all of this or whatever.
And then kicked it out of the train. First of all, if this is causing something, I mean, I know he didn't mean it like that, but you know what I mean.
But so if you like have the inkling that it's causing something, why would you kick it out?
Right.
I mean, I get it. Like at that moment, you're like, no, I don't
want
to
get it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, sarin also remained on the floor inside of the train car because again, it was wet and it was leaking. So passengers continued to get sick. A passenger used the emergency stop button in the train car with the sarin as the train was inside of a tunnel. So it couldn't stop immediately. And when it reached the next station, Tsukiji, the train was evacuated and taken out of service. A total of 13 people died and over 6,000 people were injured in the attack, several of which have had lifetime injuries.
That is fucking insane.
What's really crazy about it is how many people could have died. 13 is a lot of people. But fortunately, these cars were taken out of service quick enough.
Yeah, like their response time was crazy.
I know. And some of them, it was really long, and a lot of people were injured, but fortunately, nobody was severely, I mean, people were severely injured, that's not the right word. Fortunately, on that line that it took an hour and 48 minutes, nobody died.
Right, exactly. Like you said, 13 is a lot, but it's only 13 compared to the thousands that were actually injured.
Right, exactly. So the police raided the cult on March 22nd of 1995, which is the day that they originally were supposed to be doing it. So this actually didn't delay it at all. And in the chemical plant, in a secret room below the office, were seven cult members. Masami was one of them, and he was arrested. He did not talk for 2 days. So Kizo Harafuji was called in to help with the investigation in a hands-on way. Usually, he would help behind the scenes as a scientific investigator, and in fact, before he was brought in, he identified the compound as sarin by pictures of the tanks in the compound, which is crazy. Well, he talked to Masami about the research he had done while he was in school, which made him perk up because Masami liked talking about the research he did. And Harafuji asked him why he didn't go on and try to be a professor or do something else with his education. And Masami told him that he didn't feel like he could. He didn't feel like he belonged anywhere until he joined AUM. And there he had the ability to do whatever he wanted and could have expensive laboratory equipment, and he felt important. So Harafuji told Misami he knew the 5-stage technique he used to make sarin. And in the interview room, he actually wrote down the compounds and the chemical process. And Misami got really closed off, and he started swaying side to side. He stopped talking, and he just was mesmerized that somebody else knew exactly what he was doing. And, you know, he was frustrated.
Yeah.
Well, a few days later, Misami ended up confessing to his role in the attacks. He told police because Harafuji knew and understood his work, he knew that he wouldn't get away with it, and there's no point in lying. He also confirmed that Aum was the culprit in both sarin gas attacks. So other members also implicated the cult and provided locations for the remains of the Sakamoto family, which is that lawyer's family that I talked about in the beginning of the story that was murdered. Mm-hmm. So they found those remains in 3 separate locations and 3 separate barrels. So on March 30th, 1995, National Police Agency Commissioner General Takaji Kunimatsu was found outside of his place of residence, shot 4 times. The person who attempted to murder him rode off on a bicycle, and he survived his injuries. He had a big role in trying to help push along this case. So on May 5th, 1995, at the Shinjuku Station, which is part of the Red Marunouchi Line, 2 bags were placed in a public restroom, one with 2 liters of powdered sodium cyanide and the other with 1.5 liters of sulfuric acid. When combined, the two creates a very toxic and deadly hydrogen cyanide gas. The bags were found in the restroom on fire just before they broke and mixed. If they had actually mixed, it could have killed up to 20,000 people.
So it makes like a bomb?
Basically.
What the fuck?
So on May 16th, police finally found Asahara in a secret area in the wall of the commune. That very same day, a bomb was delivered to the governor of Tokyo's office, which detonated and blew off the fingers of his secretary.
So you said they found him in the wall?
They found him in a secret area in the wall. You know how I feel with people in the walls. I fucking hate that shit.
I know. That's why I was like, wait. We can't just bypass that.
He was dead ass in the wall. I know.
And then the bomb blew off the secretary's fingers.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, what the fuck?
So Aum lost its religious status on October 10th of 1995 and no longer was able to claim the benefits of it. The DEET did not, however, outlaw the group. So in February of 2000, the cult renamed to Aleph. The most recent known status of Aleph is that about 1,600 members are still active. The group publicly apologized for the suffering that victims experienced while Aum Shinriko was actively under Asahara and has changed several things in the doctrine. Asahara spent 8 years on trial and never once showed any sign of remorse or took any kind of responsibility. It wasn't until 2012 that Katsuya Takahashi, which was one of the getaway drivers, was captured and eventually sentenced to life in prison. So, this is directly from Japan News Today, and this is what I want to end our story with. There are 6 Aum Shinriko members that were executed by hanging on July 6th of 2018, and the quotes are going to be what they, like, titled them as. So, Shoko Asahara, who was the leader of Aum Shinriko, Yasuhiro Inogu, which was Aum's head of intelligence and chief coordinator of the Tokyo subway attack, Tamomitsu Nimi, who is the getaway driver for Hayashi, one of the perpetrators of the Tokyo subway attack, Tomomasa Nakagawa, who is a perpetrator of the Sakamoto family murder, Kiyohide Hayakawa, who is Aum's construction minister convicted of strangling a young cult member in 1989 suspected of dissonance, Seichi Endo, who was the head scientist of Aum Shinriko, the one who was playing with the Botox and anthrax. Masami Tsuchiya, who is Aum Shinriko's chief chemist and director of the sarin gas manufacturing. And then on July 26th of 2018, six more members were executed by hanging, which is Yasu Hayashi, who is a perpetrator of the Tokyo subway attack, Kenichi Hirose, who is a perpetrator of the Tokyo subway attack, Toru Toyoda, who is a perpetrator of this Tokyo subway attack, Masato Yokoyama, who is a perpetrator of the Tokyo subway attack, Kazaka Okazaki, who is a perpetrator of the Sakamoto family murder, and Satoru Hashimoto, who is a perpetrator of the Sakamoto family murder. So those 12 people, and there were several other people who were arrested, and that does include the other getaway driver that I mentioned, the Takahashi, who was away, who was able to hide until 2012, but those 12 people were executed by hanging in 2018 for their part in these crimes, their significant part in these crimes. I'm sorry, that's not funny.
I'm just saying, like, you want to do this, they should have been gassed, not hung. I mean, even though them being, or executed, whatever, like, yeah, they should have just been gassed.
Well, either way,
they're gone.
And also, can we just talk about how long that takes? That was 23 years after it happened.
Yeah, that was forever. Yeah, because it happened in 95, right?
Right, and that, of course, they got convicted and stuff like that years before, but then waiting on death row. But so 23 years later, they actually got executed for it. And yeah, that is the wild and crazy turns of this cult, Shinriko, that I was not expecting when I began researching it.
No, like, I definitely, now that we've talked about it, I do remember, like, hearing about, like, this attack on, like, the subway stations in Japan. I just never actually, like, looked into it.
Right.
So this was very interesting.
Yeah, and also very terrible.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you guys for continuing to listen. You can follow us on Instagram for pictures from the episode if Instagram lets me post them.
At Crafts, Drafts, and Crime.
You can follow our new episode updates on Facebook at
Crafts, Drafts, and Crime.
You can read our Twitter, just if you're a Twitter person, at
Crafts and Crime.
You can send us a message, either like a story about an experience you've had or any recommendations, any kind of anything you want, send it to our Gmail.
Yeah, man. At craftsdressandcrime@gmail.com. If you want to take a video of yourself singing happy birthday to Valerie, send it to us.
That's an option too.
I won't see it now, but it's there. It's implied.
And when Jasmine sends me a video, I will post it for everybody. And you can also join our Patreon, and that is at
Crafts, Drafts, and Crime.
Did I forget anything?
I don't think so. RIP DMX, guys.
Oh yeah, I know.
But yeah, that's it. That's all I have to do. And then, yeah, I think that's all.
Okay. Well, thanks guys for listening. Until next time. Bye.
Bye.